Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for June 17th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and way across the ocean this week is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
Hey, it makes it sound like I've gone somewhere. I'm a home sweet home, man, here in Tokyo. So where the heck are you, dude?
I'm in San Bernardino, California, out in the desert.
San Bernardino.
San Bernardino, that's right. From the famous Route 66 song. Here we go dating ourselves again. Stop that.
Sing it, babe.
No way. But hey, what's up, man? I leave the country for a second and the baseball world turns on, you turn it on its ear. What's going on, man?
One, it was not me.
Oh, I can't blame this on you.
No. And two, yes, of course they waited till you left because they knew with John Gibson on the beat, this would not ever have happened. They would have kept a lid on it like it was something smelly and didn't want to get it out.
Well, it's smelly and the smell has escaped the room. And now we know the source.
Oh, or do we? Okay.
All right, well, what a week we've had. Today on the show, we've got an interview with Casey McGee of the Rakuten Eagles, and we're going to discuss MPB's not-so-hidden ball trick, along with the possible Alex Ramirez trade, and more. So the bases are juiced. Let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
All right, remember, if you live in the United States, you can find out more information on watching live Giants games on oneworldsports.com. So, I went out to Tokyo Dome on Sunday the 9th before I got on the plane to come back to California and talked to Casey McGee. Now, he's been a big surprise with the Rakuten Eagles, not because of his production per se, but because the big name off-season signing was Andrew Jones.
Right.
And I think we had really high expectations for him.
Did we? Well, we had sort of like, you know, this could be interesting expectations.
Well, certainly. I mean, Andre had his problems in the big leagues and didn't do well with the Dodgers, did okay with the Yankees at the end of his career. But, of course, we remember him in the 90s with the Atlanta Braves, and he's hit so many home runs, more than 400 home runs in the big leagues. So this is a guy we, at least I did, and I still like his swing. I said it earlier this year that I still like the way he swings. I think I said it during the WBC when I got to see him live, and I like the way he's swinging. And you know, his production has picked up steadily. He didn't have a great start. Andrew didn't. But Casey has had he's been hot from the start. He's been one of the foreign players who have come over here and made the adjustment. And the multitude of adjustments with the culture and the pitching and the baseball itself. He proved himself, like I said in the interview, or you'll hear me say in the interview, from spring training, he was trying to make the adjustment of trying to fit in. And I think that was really important.
Yeah, he's made about a Brazilian adjustments. That's a multitude too.
Yep. He's hitting over 300. He's driving in runs. He's been clutch. And the thing that I want to point out is that he's played well defensively in that third base position.
Yeah, he doesn't, you know, when you see him, he's a big stocky fellow, but, you know, he covers some ground out there. He knows what he's doing. There's no, you know, this is the thing about him and, Andrew Jones is, you know, they seem to have a plan, which is nice. You know, they used to have Jose Fernandez and he had a plan. Wasn't always the same plan as the team's plan, but he had a plan.
Right.
The team was kind of clueless at that time. I got the feeling that without these two guys, the Eagles might still be a little clueless.
I agree, but I think part of it was they wanted to get somebody who was going to be consistent at the plate for them. And when you and I, after the interview with Casey on the 9th, you and I both spoke to Hoshino, Seiichi Hoshino, the skipper, and he said just the presence of these two guys in the lineup has made a big difference. And so I think they wanted to go out and get a presence, somebody who could hit for power, somebody who was a threat in that lineup, because they didn't have that. They haven't had that consistently. And so they found two guys to do that, to fill that position.
Well, they really haven't. They've had some guys who were pretty good players, but the thing with the Eagles has been that they have not a chip on their shoulder, but they've had this inferiority complex, since day one in 2005, and that they've been plagued by the feeling that we're not good enough. Therefore, I, as a player, have to do more than I think I can, than I'm comfortable doing. And they get out of their, you know, they play outside themselves. And I don't mean that in a good way.
Right.
You know, they play out of control. They try to hit pitches they can't. They shouldn't be swinging at. They try to make pitches they can't really make.
Mm-hmm.
They try to catch balls they don't have any business trying to catch. I mean, it's make throws they have no business trying to throw. So they get away from what they can really do, and they start living in this fantasy world, and they end up, as a result, when that happens, you see teams playing vastly worse than they should.
Yeah.
And that has been the history of the Eagles. And so now we've got a team which is not run by a maniac, although there will be players with bruised ribs in Japan tell you that that is not true. There's still a maniac in charge, if a somewhat softened and wiser maniac. They seem loose and relaxed, and they are performing well. So that's something new for the Rock-10 Golden Eagles.
Yeah, and I like what Casey brings, like I said, defensively, and since he's solidified that position at third, offensively and defensively, it reminds me of the team that they had in 2009 when they went to the playoffs.
Right.
They had pretty good pitching, they had good defense, and Daisuke Kusano was playing third that season, and he had one of, I think, probably his best year as a pro. And that there. So I think that's that presence by those two gentlemen, particularly what Casey is doing, because if you try to pitch around one of those guys, you're going to end up, you know, you're going to end up having to face somebody you don't want to face. So, but let's take a listen to what he had to say in the interview.
All right, Casey McGee is our guest this week. Thanks a lot for joining us, buddy.
Hey, no problem. It's just nice to speak a little English every once in a while.
All right, well, tell us in English how you ended up with the Eagles in Japan here.
It was, you know, I guess the way a lot of different options. If I wanted to stay in the States and, you know, kind of take a backup role, or if I wanted to come to Japan and get to play every day. And, you know, I just like to play. So I came over here to, you know, be able to play every day and do what I love to do. And, you know, and then Andrew coming over, I knew him a little bit from my short time in New York. And that made it even easier. Just somebody that, at least a face I recognized and knew a little bit. So I guess that's the short version.
Yeah, well, describe what it's like playing with AJ.
I mean, I'm as big a fan as anybody of his. I mean, I was you know, a fan of his, you know, high school, college, everything like that, watching him play. And, you know, he's got a lot. He's got a lot. He's seen a lot, and I mean, he's got a lot to offer as far as experience. So, you know, it's been really nice just getting to sit down and kind of pick his brain and just talk with him.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, is how has he influenced your game? I mean, a guy with that much of a major league resume playing alongside you, I mean, he's got to be a great resource.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you have guys like that when you play in the States on your teams, but, you know, it's kind of everybody together talks, but, you know, here it's more one-on-one just because of the language barrier and stuff. So, you know, we talked a lot about, you know, pitchers and how they're pitching you and stuff like that. So it's been nice kind of having another set of eyes, and hopefully I can help him a little bit sometimes with stuff, but more times than not, it's me listening.
All right, now I remember seeing footage of you in training camp where you were doing some push-ups when you would mess up. Now, how was that received by your teammates and by the club, too?
I don't know. I mean, it was, you know, I figured they were making the Japanese players do it. So, you know, my big thing was when I came over here, I just wanted to let them know that I was here to be a part of the team and not, you know, wanting special treatment and you know, act different. I wanted to be a part of what was going on. So I figured I might as well, you know, if they're having the same punishment, I might as well do it and make, you know, kind of have some fun with it. So, you know, I don't know how they received it. I think they appreciated it. I don't know.
All right, now how does your swing fit in here in Japan? Because you've been having some success, which is good, and so is AJ.
I don't know. I mean, it's as different or as the same as you want to make it. You know, I think a lot of people spend a lot of time talking about all the differences and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, they still got to throw the ball over the plate. you know, to get you out. So just really trying to be a little bit more selective and more patient. That's been the one thing I've really had to focus on. There's no such thing as a fastball count over here. You know, they're going to throw anything at any time. So you know, just trying to stay in a big part of the field and get balls that you can drive. You know.
Yes, I know. I've been seeing you do it. All right, your manager was a really fiery pitcher and a very fiery manager for years. He has settled down. After his first year here in Tohoku, he settled down and he's mellowed out a little bit. But just how is it dealing with him and going through an interpreter and all that stuff?
I mean, I love him. I mean, I think he understands more English than he maybe lets on sometimes, because every once in a while I'll say something that... semi-funny, and he'll crack a smile, but you know, I like him. He's a competitor, and he expects his players to be competitive, and you know, the bottom line, he just wants to win. So in my mind, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, he's I guess I kind of consider him the Japanese version of Lou Piniella a little bit. And you know, I had a little bit of time around Lou too, and he was the same way. He just wanted to win, and it wasn't so much that he was mad at the player or hated the player. He just hated what the player did at the time. So and I see a lot of that in him.
Now, I don't know if you guys are expecting to win. I don't know. What's the atmosphere like with this team? Because it seems a little bit different this year.
I mean, I think the big thing is I wouldn't be here if we weren't expecting to win. You know, that's no fun for anybody going in expecting to lose games. So, you know, I think that's been one of the biggest jobs that myself and Andrew have had, is to try to continue to have that mindset and kind of change the mindset, because there, you know, there's not a lot of guys here that have experienced championship teams, and you know, it's hard to believe you can do it if you've never done it. So I think that's one of the big things, is just trying to stay positive and come prepared to go every day, and not, and you know, try to lead by example and not take any days or pitches or plays off.
So obviously you guys believe you're going to be in the race, and I'm starting to believe it too. What are your impressions of the rest of the league?
Yeah, I think top to bottom, I think it's pretty evenly matched. You're not going to see anybody run away with anything. You know, I think that, especially with this interleague, I think the Pacific League is maybe starting to get a little bit more respect as far as some pretty good teams. And you know, there's four, five, six teams in the Pacific League that they've been beating each other up to this interleague. So you know, it's going to be a dogfight all the way through, and each team's got their own little thing that they're really good at, and you know, we just got to make sure we're really good at the things we can do.
All right, I've seen you visit the mound when you're in the field, and there's a mound visit, and all the guys gather around. What are those mound visits like for you when you go out there?
Well, it's not, Kaz speaks English, but I think when I go up there, sometimes I'm a little excited, and my English gets going a little fast for him. So usually what I say doesn't ever actually get to the pitcher. But you know, more than anything, it's, even though they can't understand maybe exactly what you're saying, I think it's just a body language and a presence to let them know that you're there with them, and you know, and that it's going to be all right, and just keep making pitches, and you know, they've got guys behind them that are wanting to help.
All right, well, we see that you're helping this team a lot. Hope you continue it, and guys do well throughout the season.
No, I appreciate it. Hopefully we get a nice long run in the playoffs, and a short off season, I guess.
All right, good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Alrighty, thank you very much, Casey, for sitting down. I'm glad we were able to give you a little respite and a little bit of English conversation.
Is that what you'd call your mode of speech? English conversation. Now I know.
Well,
now I got a handle on it now.
Wasn't the most probing interview we've ever had, but it was informative. Now, what caught your ear?
Well, you know, well, we should have had a spoiler alert before you introduced the interview, because I talked to different players on the Eagles. Andrew Jones told me this back at the very beginning of May, and so did Takashi Saito, and so did Daryl Rasner just the other day, that the difference with the Eagles this year is attitude. And Raz said that part of the attitude, or essentially, I said, well, what do you mean? He says, well, we go to the park thinking we're going to win.
Yep.
And that wasn't always the case. You know, they probably went to the park thinking they might win, and if they were leading after five innings, that, wow, you know what, we might win today.
We might have a chance.
We might have a chance. And he said, you know, now, if we're down in the late innings, we still think we're going to win. He said, we don't always win, of course, and a lot of times we don't, but we still think that. And what's different is having Casey McGee and Andrew Jones, I should do it the other way around, because Andrew Jones bats third and Casey McGee bats fourth.
Mm-hmm.
Is it fourth and fifth?
I think it was fourth and fifth.
Okay. Having Andrew Jones and Casey McGee in the middle of the lineup has been really steady. Now, as you said, Andrew Jones didn't have high average numbers at the beginning of the season, but he was walking twice a game.
Right.
And Casey McGee walks a lot as well. So they have these, you know, so often if somebody gets on in front of Andrew Jones, it's often like instantly switching to having the bases loaded, because these guys are on base a lot. And that's really hard if you're an opposing pitcher and you're faced with bases loaded situations or lots of guys on base, and now to avoid that, you got to pitch to one of these guys, and that's not always easy.
Not always.
So Raz said, you know, they seem to feed each other off each other, which is what Casey said, essentially, that he's picking up stuff, and they, to some degree, they help each other out, because, you know, it's two sets of eyes are better than one, and it's great to have somebody with Andrew Jones' experience on the team. So Hoshino basically said, as you pointed out, what's the difference? Well, I asked him, where does the attitude come from? He said, having these two guys with this American winning spirit, well, this kind of big league winning spirit,
mm-hmm.
he said, has made a world of difference.
Yeah, and it's great to hear Casey say that he was a fan of Andrew, but that he hopes he can teach him something. You know, I was impressed with that, because I think that Casey can point out some areas that, for example, hey, you're pulling off the ball, or you're lunging at pitches, or your swing is doing this or that. I think they can both help each other, because as we found out when we had our lunch with Dr. Gail Hopkins,
mm-hmm.
he was talking about a player he used to play with and said, this guy was susceptible to low fastballs inside, and the pitchers found out very quickly that was his weak area.
Mm-hmm.
These guys, they know who's good and what they can do, and they can help each other out.
Sure.
Hey, look, you know, you're doing this, you're doing that. So I'm pretty sure Casey can look from the, in this case, since he's in the next batter's circle, he can say, hey, you know, you're doing this or you're doing that. I think they are feeding off each other in that respect. And then to say that they're both a huge impact, and that they can make a difference with one swing if somebody gets on, that's the biggest thing, because the Eagles got some production in the past, they have gotten some production in the past couple of years with some long balls, but nobody really consistent.
Right.
And these guys are consistent home run threats, and that makes pitchers pitch people a little bit differently. You know, they might not be as willing to go three balls and two strikes, because they don't want to put guys on ahead of these guys, because you never know which one of them might take you deep.
Well, really, and yeah, they've both been trying to stay off the pitches they can't hit, knowing, and they've been very successful with that. Andrew Jones didn't draw a lot of walks in the U.S., but we saw him with a tremendous on-base percentage in the World Baseball Classic, and he's been essentially that kind of player. More on base, I mean, he does have, I think, 12, he has, both of them are in that 11-12 home run area.
Yeah, Jones has 11 and McGee has 13.
Right, okay. And Andrew Jones had a very good month in May. He would have been my third pick for the player, the top performer of the month in May.
Yeah.
So that's been very important. The other thing I want to mention is Casey McGee's adjustments. Now, what you didn't talk about in the interview is that he has his family. He's got quite an entourage with his family here. He has a child who's a school age child, but with a handicap of some sort. I don't know. And his wife is a teacher, and they've been homeschooling their oldest child. And, you know, the reason that I found out about this, because I asked, you know, when's your family coming, is, you know, they're already here. And I asked because I heard the age of his child, usually if they're school age, they're back home in the States until the summertime.
Right.
And mom comes with all the kids when the oldest is out of school. But they were here already and they're set up shop and they're, you know, he strikes me as being, you know, this sounds like it's maybe a stereotype, and I'm probably talking about something I don't really understand, which, what has that ever stopped me in the past?
I don't know.
The answer is never. Okay, but if you have a child who has special needs and special makes special demands on you that are not always predictable and not always something that the team prepares you for, or life prepares you for, or, you know, transportation prepares for you. If you're not flexible, you can't be a parent. You know, this is a guy who's dealt with more than his share of unusual situations. So, you know, that's got to help you. That's got to help you grow up.
Certainly.
You got to grow up fast. And he has grown up in a hurry here in Japan. And I mean that, you know, or developed what he can do. Brought out his skills in a hurry here, which is not, well, yeah, more credit to him. You know, go to it.
Yeah. Now, I also like the fact that he said he thinks that Hoshino was the Japanese version of Lou Piniella, which that was striking for me because Hoshino hasn't been as fiery the past 2 years. I think he was that first year. He was slamming the seat next to him after losses while he was sitting on the bench there in Tohoku and in other stadiums, whenever they'd suffer a tough loss, whenever they'd make some mistakes and lose some games late. And I haven't seen that version of him the past 2 years, so it's funny, maybe behind the scenes he's going off, but when he's out in front of the cameras now, Hoshino is a little bit more mellow. And I thought that was interesting that we've seen Lou Piniella blow up and kick benches and not kick players, and like he's
like Hoshino's done.
Yeah, like slapping Eiji Ochiai in the face right there on the mound in front of the world and everybody. But we haven't seen that guy the past
I told you what Hoshino. I asked. I don't know if I mentioned it on the podcast, but I was talking with Hoshino when the Eagles were playing very well, and he was in a kind of expansive mood and talking about this and that. And I said, you know, you're kind of mellowing out. He says, of course I'm mellowing out. Of course I'm mellowing out. I'm old.
Old is old. Old is as old does.
nobody has the if looks can kill. Stare like Hoshino.
That's true. That's all he really has to do. He doesn't have to slam the seat and kick anything. He just gives you that look.
He's got the look.
Yeah. Now, the last thing that I wanted to talk about that Casey said was that the team is winning. They're in second place right now, or the Eagles are in second place right now. But he said it's hard to believe you can do it if you've never done it in terms of winning the title and going on to the Japan Series and winning in the playoffs. And that's probably true, but, you know, I'm not sure. He didn't say it was impossible and he didn't say unlikely. He's just saying it's difficult. But, you know, that team that was in the playoffs and finished second in 2009 had some talent that we know about. It just brings back the memories of that game in which they had a pretty big lead, and then they brought in Hisashi Iwakuma to relieve, and we know that Termell Sledge hits the grand slam off of him, and they ended up losing that series in the playoffs. And
yeah, word to the Seattle Mariners: next time you get the next Iwakuma, don't say bullpen.
yeah, don't do that. So, you know, I think the Eagles look good. They look similar to that team. They're getting some good production, but you know, there's a whole second half. There's not much separation between them and the top team in front of them, the Lotte Marines, but there's not much separation between them and the third place team. So, should be fun to watch them develop and maybe mature over the second half of the season. They have some unproven guys who are going to have to play a lot of pressure games in the second half. So I'm looking forward to the second half and good luck to them.
Yeah, Yeah, we did talk about, you know, last year at this juncture, we talked about the young Eagles, and some of them are looking really good. Some of them have sort of disappeared off the radar screen. But Genji Akinmi, who wasn't one of the guys really on my radar screen, I didn't have a big opinion of him when he started, but he was just a pup, and he's really come on, and a couple of other guys have sort of disappeared, but the team is plowing along. Now the pitching has been, the bullpen is a bit of a hit and miss, and Daryl Rasner is the closer, and he has these perilous games. He gets it done, and he's willing to go out there and keep getting it done without carrying a lot of baggage. And if you can do that, you're a closer. I mean, if you can throw two pitches for strikes and you cannot worry about the last game when you got your butt kicked, you're a closer.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, if he hits his spots, he's effective. If he doesn't, he's in trouble.
Sure.
All right. Well, thank you again, Casey. We appreciate you sitting down with us, and good luck.
Yeah, Case, and hopefully we'll see you soon.
All right. Now, let's get to the ball. Yeah, the hidden ball trick, or the hiding of the ball was happening when batters were spanking it into the seats and hiding it from the pitchers. NPB announced this past week that it had deceived the teams, players, public, and the world, essentially, about the ball.
Well, they also said they deceived the commissioner.
The commissioner said he was deceived, I think.
Indeed.
Yeah.
This is the central part of the story, actually.
Right. Now, this has been labeled a scandal. People have had some harsh comments about it. Even Claudio from Toronto on the Facebook page said, what was the benefit of lying? And I agree. I mean, it was a unilateral decision to change the ball to the low-impact ball in the first place. So if you want to liven up the game, it would have been warmly welcomed by us. But what was the point of not telling people that the ball was changed? And then, of course, the numbers were starting to bear out the fact that it had changed. But, of course, I went out to baseball parks and was talking to a lot of reporters the whole season.
Mm.
And after 3 weeks to a month, they were all saying the ball's different. You know?
It wasn't even 3 weeks, and we saw it. I mean, we saw it opening day.
So
we could see things were different. I think it was the Jose Lopez pulling a pitch that was about 3 inches off the outside part of the plate,
mm-hmm.
and pulling it into the seats and left at Tokyo Dome. I was thinking, wow, that is something we haven't seen in a couple of years. So, you know, he got a great swing on a tough ball to hit, but that ball, as well as he hit it, should have been off the wall and not... and not into the seats. Okay, so we've seen that a lot, and the numbers made it look like something had changed. I did point out that last year was a different, that they introduced the ball in 2011.
Correct.
But there were a lot of things going on in 2011. We had low light conditions through the end of June, or I guess through the end of June. There were no night games in Kanto.
Right, we played more day games. It was warmer.
Until it wasn't warmer, but there were more. There were no night games in Kanto until the middle of May. So there's more light, is what it is. There's more light, and the ball travels better in the daytime.
Yeah, my warmer comment meaning that because they played day games in March. They started in April that year.
In April, right.
They started this season later than usual.
Okay, so there were. They also had new. They also changed the umpiring regime that year.
Right,
so there was so many changes. Okay, anyway, last year the balls dropped further. The number of home runs decreased further, which was really strange. Okay, and now compared to the past 2 years, we see a lot more home runs. Now, okay, so that's what we're observing. There are more home runs, but, you know, where it fits in, is it because it's early in the season? Blah, blah, blah. A lot of things to think about. Okay, well, anyway, in April, I'm going to say it was the 12th of April, the commissioner said in response to a question from the media, we have not changed the ball a bit.
Right.
We have not changed it one lick. The maker of the ball, Mizuno, said we've done nothing to change the ball. Now, according to the commissioner, the first statement was true as he knew it. According to the Mizuno officials, the second statement was a lie. A bald-faced lie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the story. The back story is this. And the people, the copy I've seen in the United States has been a little off the point, that somehow the ball was changed secretly to make the game livelier. Now, that may be true, and right. I suspect that is true, but that is not yet the story.
Right.
That has not yet been supported. Basically, they test the balls periodically. When they test the balls, they take samples from the stockpiles of balls at parks ready to be used for the games. They take cases of balls and they test them.
Right.
Now, what they found out last year and what everybody in Japanese baseball knew, or at least everybody in NPB knew, was that the balls last year were not as high, they were not as lively as they were supposed to be. Too many balls were not as lively as they were supposed to be.
Right.
Okay. Now, that's situation one. Now they said, so last summer they said, well, in order to make the balls as lively as we want them, as they are supposed to be,
right.
The Secretary General of NPB, Kunio Shimoda, and some of his staff, up to a maximum of two people, as far as the story goes, went to Mizuno and said, can you do this? Can you make a ball that is slightly more lively?
Right, can you get it up to the standards that we want?
Exactly. Now, essentially, Mizuno had been targeting the center of their target for how lively the ball was the minimum amount of liveliness allowed by the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a problem. Because if that's what you're aiming at, half the balls are going to be below that.
Well, I don't know that you could say half, but I think that when you're aiming for one thing, your plus minus.
Exactly. There's a plus minus.
Is going to be high. Yeah.
So there's going to be a substantial, it might not be half, it might be 47%, it might be 40%, it might be 60%. But the fact is, if you're aiming, your target is the minimum standard. The balls, a large chunk of those balls aren't going to be up to snuff. That's a separate issue. Okay. So basically they went to Mizuno. Mizuno said, they played around with different formulas, different compositions of natural rubber and low impact rubber, different percentages of that mixture. And they said in October, yes, we can do it. In December, they said, okay, let's go do it. Now, here's the thing. According to NPB's official story, the current official story.
Current one, yes, because
yep.
We don't know. It's been different in the past.
We don't know
if it's going to stay the same.
Exactly. Kunio Shimoda made this decision, and this is like a business decision. This is like saying NPB needs to order more paper clips. You know, who cares?
Right.
You know, NPB publicizes every change. We're going to have a campaign to speed up the game by 12.3 seconds per game next year. Let's have a big campaign. Okay. This is something that is essential to the game and of no concern. You know, the players would go, okay. Oh, good. Yeah. Okay. The pitchers would go, okay. All right. The managers would go, okay. No problem. We're all using the same ball. No problem. But they decided, in order to avoid confusion, let's take this issue off the table. We're not only going to take it off the table, we're going to cloak it in secrecy.
We're putting it under the table.
They buried it. They swore at Mizuno to silence. Two people at Mizuno only were to know. Nobody else was to know. The teams were not to know. The commissioner was not to know.
And that's is my biggest problem. That's my biggest issue with the thing is you talk about lack of institutional control. How could the commissioner, whose signature is on each ball, could he not know?
He could know it. Okay, now here's the thing.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Yeah, well, this is the question. Now, a friend of the podcast, Robert Whiting, told me that Kato's, and this, I sincerely believed Kato when I heard him at the press conference, that he sincerely believed what he said. The ball had not changed. But here's the thing. He said, this is where the story starts to fall apart. Not his story. I believe him. I'll come out and say it. I believe him 100%.
Okay.
Now.
You might be in the minority, but okay.
Yeah, well, I think that's the standard. If you don't know him, if you've never talked to him, if you don't know anything about him, and you live in Japan where politicians accused of bribery all have their secretaries sent to prison because the secretaries take the money without their knowledge.
Right.
So if you live in Japan, you're used to this. Okay, but my gut feeling is I trust him and I believe him.
Okay.
I can't imagine this guy whose life is built on trust, who has far bigger fish to fry than NPD in his world view.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he loves baseball, but he's on boards of directors. He's a very important person in Japan. Would let things get out of control for something so meaningless and silly. Okay, here's what happens. According to the official story, Shimoda not only decides not to announce it, he decides to bury it and not tell his boss. Okay, now that's bad enough. And they do it in secrecy so the teams don't know, the players don't know. Okay, now, in April, the media comes to the commissioner and says, did the ball change? And he says, no, it didn't change. Now, here's the weird thing. And this is the part that really flies, I mean, it flies further in the face of logic. If Shimoda had changed this, and now his boss is making statements to the press that are patently untrue,
mm-hmm.
and something that anybody's going to be able to figure out,
mm-hmm.
it's now his duty to spill the beans and say, no, the commissioner isn't lying.
I agree.
But, okay, moving on, next step. May 12th, the union comes to NPB at a working group session of the union and the NPB labor group in Sendai. And they say, we suspect that our working conditions have changed. Why? Because we believe the ball is different, and we believe that is going to affect the performance incentive, performance-based incentive clauses in pitchers' contracts.
Mm-hmm.
Negatively. So we want to see your test data. And they said, oh, well, in fact, we changed the ball. Sorry, we didn't tell you.
Right.
Well, now here's the thing. They're liable in labor court to tell the truth to the union. They are obligated, or they're going to be, massive trouble with that.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody asked at the press conference, well, what, it's okay to tell the truth to the union, but it's okay to lie to the media. And basically they said, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So here's the thing. If you don't believe Kato, then you have a story. You have to explain why he would lie to some about something. Then everything fits nicely. Now, if you do believe him, you have to think somebody wanted the ball changed. Okay. Somebody wanted the ball changed who had no authority to change it. And somebody who wants to get rid of Kato and embarrass him furthermore.
Well, that's a deep-rooted conspiracy theory. But, you know, I look and I say, look, it was the worst-kept secret in the history of switcheroos that
exactly.
happened. Okay,
exactly.
So we knew something was going on. And you look at the commissioner coming out and saying, hey, I didn't know. Now, that's something a high school coach says about drug-taking players on his team. I didn't know they were taking drugs. But you have to control the situation. And if he had any idea that the ball might have been changed, it was his obligation to go to Shimoda or whomever and say, what's going on with the ball? I should know. And so I don't know.
Yeah.
That I don't know is not acceptable. And then for them, I'm saying whoever in NPB told Mizuno not to divulge the truth to the public and to lie is another part of this cover-up that is not acceptable.
Yeah. Now, here's the other thing. If the commissioner's story is true, Shimoda should have been fired.
Long ago.
No, he should have been fired on May 12th when the commissioner suddenly is told that the ball's been different. Oh, and you were letting me make false... If
that's
this
long
is,
ago.
Right. No, I'm saying if the commissioner's point is true, now here's where the story came... his story came from this. When in 2000... There was a time in 2012 when there were more home runs than there had been in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a time when this was true. And basically somebody said, why? And Mizuno said, our best guess, and apparently this is honestly said, our best guess is that the hitters have adjusted to it. And I believe this is true. Not to the liveliness of the ball, but to the fact that changing the seams and the cover. And a lot of the hitters I talked to said the same thing. Also, the second half of 2011 and the first half of 2011 are night and day.
Mm-hmm.
that once players got used to it and went back to their normal swings, we started seeing opposite field home runs in the second half of 2011 that had disappeared for the first 3 months.
Right.
Okay. So the feeling was, okay, the players have just made another adjustment to the ball. That was Kato's assumption. That had been the official point of view in the second half of 2011. That would have been Mizuno's best guess in 2012. Okay, so that part, he was basically trotting out the old reason. No, it's the hitters are making better adjustments. Okay, and some managers, Akiyama for one, said that's what's happening.
Yeah.
So,
well,
okay.
I mean, they're calling it a scandal, like I said before.
It is a scandal.
The whole thing for me is the if I'm in charge and somebody asks me about the ball, I'm not going to say I don't know. I'm going to say I'll look into it.
He didn't say I don't know. He said, hasn't been changed.
That's back in April, when he was asked in April. Yeah, and I understand that. But at that point, I look into it, and I say, hey, what's going on? And I solve the problem myself. I don't wait till the players come and ask me. I don't wait until June. Like I said, this lack of institutional control is his responsibility. And I believe him or not, I might believe that he didn't know in April, but I expect him to look into it. I can't imagine a major league commissioner not looking into something and turning his back on the whole situation. And then when asked and probed here in June, saying, I don't know. I don't accept that.
No. Well, he didn't say, I don't know.
He didn't know.
I will grant you that is the black mark right there, is that he did nothing to ask the question. You know, he wasn't the good editor. What's missing in this story? He went along with other business.
Right. And what you say, saying that Shimoda should have been fired, as soon as I find out that someone told an outside company that is making the balls to lie to the public or to lie to the press, lying to the public, I'm firing that guy.
Right, which means, to my point, now, if you believe Kato, the commissioner, that day is May 12th.
Yeah.
Or May 13th was actually the day he got May 12th, the day he got the explanation. The teams did not know. Two officials with two different teams told me they did not know. I heard Mr. Yamagishi from the Giants say he did not know. I trust him. I trust that nobody in the teams knew. But yeah, my thinking is this: the one team. Well, I think Kato has a lot of enemies.
Mm.
For one major reason, he has a lot of enemies is because of the arbitration for him bringing in outsiders who will vote against the teams in arbitration. So a lot of the teams want to get rid of him because he's not, you know, he's just not always on their side. He's not 100% biased against the players, which is what the commissioner should be.
Right.
Okay. But my personal feeling is that this is the work of somebody who's extremely influential, who has no authority to change the ball.
You have a conspiracy theory. I have a theory that a lot of people were in on this and that.
I have a conspiracy theory. It's not much of a conspiracy theory, but if you have a theory that a lot of people are into it, you have a stupidity theory.
That is exactly where I was headed.
Because you have to believe that these people are so stupid to make a minor change which will have major consequences and then bury it in secrecy like they've hired it's like a James Bond movie.
All right. Well, yeah, we have to move on. But
how stupid is that? It's ridiculous.
We all knew they changed the ball for no reason. They changed it back for no reason. No one would have cared that much if they would have told us in the off season and let the pitchers get all these stipulations in their contracts ahead of time.
Oh.
And then it would have been fine. But they didn't.
As an addendum to that. The best comment I've heard since the ball came out, the team has basically said, okay, the ball's different, we'll deal with it. Except my buddy, Chunichi Dragons manager, Morimichi Takagi, said, the ball has ruined our season.
Yeah, yeah. It ain't the ball, buddy.
Because our team depends on pitching and defense. And we can't play baseball with a ball that's lively.
Yeah, huh? Yeah, I did see that. I did see that. Well,
how stupid can you get?
He's looking for an excuse for why his managing skills are so lacking.
You think?
All right, we have...
He blamed the ball for the fact that they can't catch it.
Yeah, we got to move on, but we will be back. We will revisit this story, I'm sure, a number of times as the season moves along. Let's go on to the potential trade of the year. We heard, I guess just before I left, actually, that Alex Ramirez, Rami Chan of the Yokohama Bay Stars might be involved in a trade to the Chibolote Marines. And no offense to Yoshio Otoi or Hiroshi Kisanuki and others involved with the trade with the Fighters and Buffaloes, but this would be the trade of the year, obviously. Now,
hold on. Why?
Why? Because of the money, simply the money involved in the name. I mean, we're talking about a Mei Kyukai player being traded for, and I didn't know who the principals were in the Lotte side, on the Lotte side, who would have been moved to Yokohama. I didn't see any names involved, did you?
I did not.
The only
story I heard was that both teams, Lotte said they were, the team said somebody revealed that the teams were negotiating.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. So, I don't know what I saw some stories early on once I had hit the ground here in Los Angeles, near Los Angeles, but I was actually in Los Angeles until a couple of days ago. So, the rumor was that he'd slide right into the cleanup spot and be the DH, and it would give the Marines some pop there, and he might, you know, if he can stay relatively healthy and productive, since he wasn't chasing balls in the outfield, it'd be a good pickup for the Marines as they move forward, because they had been lacking in the power department until somebody mentioned it, and then Iguchi started going crazy right after I said they didn't have any power. Iguchi started going crazy, and now, did you notice this? I wanted to, as an aside, this past weekend, once the ball story came out, that there were a lot of 10-run games. Did you notice that? High run games.
I did.
Is different, but...
I did, but not a lot of home runs.
Yeah, not a lot of home runs necessary, but anyway.
But yes, we had a lot of 5- and 6-run innings this weekend.
Yeah, so I want to play a quick soundbite from Alex Ramirez in an interview that I did in late April after he got his 2,000th hit, and just discuss that once it's over here. Let's take a listen to that.
So how important are these numbers, these milestones for you?
Well, 400 home runs is, for me, of course, it is important, and I'm going to try to do my best to do it. And but, you know, like I said, even if I don't hit 400 home runs, nothing is going to change in my career now. You know, I mean, I already got 2,000 hits. I will be in the Mei Kyukai. So it really doesn't matter if I hit 400 home runs. It will be great, but, you know, if I don't do it, is you know, it's still okay.
All right, so how much longer can we expect you to be playing now? Have you thought about that? I know you have an option for next year.
I got an option for next year, but, you know, I don't know. I don't know how long, you know, I'm going to stay in the game. It's becoming a little bit hard for me to stay in the Central League because of my defense and stuff like that. I really like to, I would love to hit. And, you know, if I get an opportunity to be in the Pacific League, it'll probably be probably the best thing for me if I want to play a couple more years. But as right now, you know, I'm not thinking about that. I'm just thinking about helping my team to win and making this team to, you know, make it to a playoff. So I would say maybe 2 or 3 years, you know, and then hopefully I become a manager someday, somewhere.
All right, well, you can pick up running with me. It keeps you in good shape.
Yeah, hey.
Run marathon.
Yo, you run too much, man, you know, too much. You're too early in the morning, you know, I need some rest. That's my goal, you know, see what happens this year.
So I know you're also interested in managing, and what are you doing to pursue that? Are you thinking about, you're going to coach first, or you want to go straight to the managing?
You know, it may be hard, but I think that I would like to just, you know, go straight to be a manager if I get the opportunity. I don't see myself, you know, going and coaching for a year or two. And then if I don't get the opportunity, well, then I have to wait. But I think that for, you know, my knowledge and my experience in baseball and what I have accomplished, and I think that I'm ready to be a manager.
Okay.
Well, no surprise that, I mean, Alex Ramirez has talked about, you know, basically when we ask players before Interleague every year, what do you like about Interleague? And Alex would say, designated hitter, baby. As I'm a designated hitter.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
No surprise.
He had dropped a few balls in the outfield. He hadn't really looked good in the outfield. Actually, when he was a Giant, he had a shoulder problem, if you recall, and wasn't able to throw the ball very well back in, I think it was 2008, 2009. So, I mean, I think he had resigned himself to eventually playing in the Pacific League. So it was not a shocking revelation for him to actually say that to me during that interview. But, yeah, he's had some nasty errors with the Bay Stars so far this year. And once he got to 2,000 hits, it was like he had the plague. He hasn't really been out there on the field.
Well, the other thing is, you know, the same thing that caused Tony Plush to spend time on the farm team is the Bay Stars just had a – it seemed at that time in April that all the Bay Stars hitters except Nigel Morgan and Alex Ramirez were hitting the cover off the ball.
Yeah.
So they had like five Japanese guys who could play, and Niger and Alex and Hichori Morimoto are going like, oh, don't forget I'm on the team.
Please, yeah. Put me in, coach.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I think, you know, Alex had this in his mind. I think, yeah, putting all these things into account, I think he's actually been pushing for something like this, especially since he's not playing and he's not getting any younger. And each game he spends on the bench is adding to the rust factor. So I think this eventually, maybe he might push for some other team. Now, you said that his business interest would involve him maybe staying around the Tokyo area. I say wherever the job is, that's where you should go.
Well, I agree with that.
First, yeah.
I think, yeah, but if I've got a restaurant in Aoyama, in the heart of Tokyo, I would prefer, you know, the best place is Jingu Stadium, where you can walk there through the cemetery. But did that. But next would be Tokyo Dome, and next would be Yokohama, and after that would be Chiba, and next Cebu. So we'd go on out there. But the thing with Lotte is in terms of team strength, you know, that's a good deal. That's a good situation for the Marines, although they also have, they've got two DHs right now, although neither of them have any power. And Alex, to be honest, doesn't seem to have that much power anymore either. So I don't know if that's a big thing, but it's a great fan environment. So that's probably the best for him. The other thing is that the Pacific League teams, if you look around, who needs a DH? Not the Fighters. Not the Hawks, not the Buffaloes, the Lions. I'd rather have Ortiz or somebody of that like who can actually play defense now and then.
Yeah.
Alex can play now and then. So the answer is probably Lotes might be the best fit. If he doesn't go to Lotte, it might be wait till next year.
Well, I haven't seen that much in the news since the mm-hmm. initial stories about the trade, so we'll see if it happens. Maybe the Lotte cooled off a little because it was in the news. Somebody leaked it. Maybe they're stepping away from that side. But, I think it's a good idea. Hopefully it gets done and he can get some more playing time and get closer to the 400 home run mark. A couple of notes. Let's hit a couple of notes. Congratulations to you for picking properly the Hawks as the winner of the Interleague.
Yeah, well, you know, every dog has his day, babe.
Well, you go, dog. You had a good May in choosing all four of the top performers, and then you properly predicted the Interleague winner. So let's go to Vegas.
I don't gamble.
Did it? Well, no, you don't have to. I'm taking you to pick, and then I'll lay the money down. It's my money.
Oh, okay. Okay, hold on.
Of which you might get a percentage.
Book on the tickets now. I know a place we can stay.
All right, a couple of notes. NPB announced, this is just before I left, I think it was on the 10th, that they are going to open an umpiring school. And the reason I wanted to address this is because we had a question on the show earlier by Kozo, earlier this year, by Koza Ota, who asked about umpiring. And I did a little bit of research and found out that Jim Clem, who is a director of an umpiring school in the United States, is going to be participating or involved in this umpiring school. It's going to take place during December 18th to the 23rd at a cost of 85,000 yen. And they're going to allow 50 to 60 applicants to take part. And mm-hmm. it's basically a mini umpiring training camp. And,
wow.
And that three candidates will be chosen to move on. And I'm not sure if they're going to be hired or I'm not sure exactly what they're going to be doing, but there'll be three candidates who will be, who have an opportunity to win or to earn jobs as umpires. So
wow.
If you're interested in calling balls and strikes and missing plays at the plate and first base,
again,
the trap catch call, please contact MPB.
That's right. We know some managers who are dying to meet you.
Did you say dying to beat you?
Koshi, sit down.
All right, one other note. I noticed that Shinya Miyamoto, as well as the skipper Junji Ogawa, fired off after some poor defensive efforts from the Swallows, the Yakult Swallows, and Miyamoto saying that this is not worthy of a professional team after a six-error game in which he was not involved in any of the errors. I don't even know that he played that day.
No, the errors were committed by, I think, a 21-year-old and a 23- or 24-year-old, both still technically rookies. One at third base, one at second and short. And, it was ugly.
Yeah, it was ugly, but, the team is unfortunately zapped. I don't know if it's the pitching or the injuries, but the fight is kind of dying out from the Swallows at the moment. I believe on Sunday they fell behind and they came back and I'm not sure if they actually took the lead in this game or not, but they ended up losing by a lot. But the previous day they won, they beat the Buffalo. So I want to say that as soon as I think the fight is out of them, then they win a couple games here, but they're only winning to stop losing streaks, so that's not good.
Okay, well, I'll pass on the logic on that one, but moving along.
Well,
they should continue to
every time
they
win, they stop. Every time they win, they stop a losing streak. That's only.
Oh, okay. So they don't win any games in consecutively.
Well,
they got one win. We're not losing. We don't need to win. Okay.
But what do you think about Miyamoto firing off on the younger players like that? I mean, this is not worthy of professional baseball.
Well, frustration mostly. I think frustration of the fact that these young kids are playing instead of him.
That might be it.
Here's a guy who's the oldest Gold Glove winner in history, and he's a very unselfish and a very intelligent man. And I don't want to read too much into it, other than just sort of. He's the senior statesman on the team, and he felt it was time to, open his mouth and let fly a little bit. He's pretty, he's been pretty pointed in his criticism of the owners when he was the head of the players' union, but still reserved and in a calculated fashion. I doubt he ever says anything without a reason.
Yeah.
So I trust his judgment as much as. Anybody, it was said for effect, and we'll see if there's any effect, or if the Swallows just continue to throw the season away.
Literally.
Exactly.
All right, well, we didn't have any questions this week, but please send your questions or leave a comment on the Facebook page. Send the questions to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and we can't wait to discuss it on the show. And please chime in on Ballgate.
Ballgate, wow. Could have been worse. You could have come up with a different name for it, but I think that'll do for now.
I think we'll stay in the PG-13 rating system here.
Is that what it was? Wow, I can't watch that show.
All right, thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Okay, talk to you next week.
All right, enjoy your baseball.